Welcome to Laura's Lounge, the podcast where I mostly talk about mental health, parenthood, and self-improvement and share my personal insight and experiences on the topics. Thank you for tuning in. I'm so glad that you're here. In today's episode, we're going to talk a little bit about the impact of the 90s and like early 2000s diet and tabloid cultures and how messed up it all was because, well, I'm a little bitter about it all. We'll also touch on the detrimental effects that toxic diet culture had on people, especially millennial girls and women, and what it did to our relationships with food, our body image, and our mental health. But before we delve into today's episode, I do want to provide a bit of a trigger warning. This discussion revolves around eating disorders, including my personal experiences, and the content may evoke strong emotions or memories. So please approach it with self-compassion and care. If you're currently struggling with an eating disorder, consider skipping this episode or taking breaks if needed. Please take care of yourselves and know that your well-being is priority. And I love you so much. Okay, so let's get into it. As a fellow millennial, I know that many, many of you have faced the same soul-crushing struggles I have due to the toxic diet culture of the 90s. And that really hurts my heart. And honestly, it just pisses me off. Hands up if you, like me, have also battled body dysmorphia or an eating disorder at some point in your life. Maybe it's something you're still battling. You are so not alone. It's genuinely disheartening to realize just how many of us can relate and how those past demons still haunt us today, mostly stemming from growing up in the 90s and having that poisonous culture shoved down our throats with every single magazine, billboard, and commercial that we ever laid our eyes on. It was just everywhere. Like, we couldn't escape the assault of subliminal messages or explicit messages filled with the unrealistic beauty standards and fad diets. And, you know, this was done on purpose, of course, because dollars. Like, the diet industry makes literal billions of dollars a year. Money just rules everything. It's so lame. Got to make that coin, right? Even if it's off of our growing insecurities and body issues. But growing up, it really felt like society had reduced our entire worth to a number on a scale. And goodness, did it take a toll on our mental health and our self-perception. And it wasn't just like sickly, skinny models on nearly every ad that you saw for anything ever, but there was a constant flow of new magazine covers in every waiting room, dentist, doctor's office, or grocery store you ever walked into, shaming women's bodies left and right and making females everywhere just hate themselves. Headlines talking about 15 worst beach bodies and shockingly disgusting celebrity bodies like littered the shelves at every checkout aisle you walked by, filled with the most unflattering bikini pictures possible, pointing out every single bit of cellulite or squish. These articles would tear down and rip apart these perfectly healthy humans who are just trying to live and enjoy their lives. And no one was safe from this poison. And Britney Spears, Jennifer Aniston, Tyra Banks, Jessica Simpson, like it goes on and on and on. But we all remember flipping through those magazines and seeing what appeared to be normal, healthy women being straight disrespected and torn apart because they had a stomach roll or a muffin top or because they dared to eat in public. And it was just perpetuating toxic diet culture. And it was also perpetuating fat phobia. It had women being terrified to gain weight, terrified to be fat. It had me fully believing that I was less than because I didn't have a thigh gap or protruding hip bones. And my friends and I would spend hours fretting over our bodies and our clothes in the mirror during sleepovers. And we would try to help give each other diet tips while we complained to each other about how hungry we were as we ate nothing but rice cakes and celery and water for days. We would try to do the at-home workout tapes in our living rooms between AIM sessions with boys that we had crushes on that we felt we needed to starve ourselves for so that they think we were worthy. Ugh, like it makes me nauseous thinking about it now. It's really sad just how little we thought of ourselves and how non-existent our self-worth was. And like, I honestly don't know if I want to go back in time and hug my younger self or just slap her across the face to knock some sense into her. I mean, I would hug her just FYI, but it really does make me really angry to think about it. Like if I think about it too much, and that lack of self-worth and that lack of self-love that we had stuck with us well into adulthood, many of us didn't know what it meant to truly love ourselves until we were in our friggin' 30s and like had worked years and years to do all sorts of inner healing. But, the good news is that the love and acceptance that we have finally cultivated for ourselves in our 30s feels like a hard-earned victory, like a gift that we will cherish for life. And many still haven't found self-love, and that's okay. It can be very hard to look in the mirror and get on that path and do all that inner work. But everyone's journey is valid, and we are all a work in progress. You know, nobody is perfect. And it took me years of ups and downs and backs and forths and years of facing my insecurities head on and learning to let go of harmful societal expectations to get to where I am. And I still struggle at it at times because, like, I'm human. I mean, I've come such a far way, but like, I have a lot of work to do still. But once you start walking that path of self-discovery, it's a powerful journey that you'll never regret. If there's one thing that I could tell my younger self and others out there who are still seeking self-love, it would be to be patient and gentle with yourself. Like, you have to give yourself grace and understand that you are worth the love and kindness that you extend to others. You just are. It's never too late to start that journey to self-love. And it's never too early either. No matter where you are on that path, know that you're never alone and that there are countless beautiful souls out here cheering you on, just like I am. But the 90s just really jacked us up, man. Like, so much damage was caused. And then in the wake of such widespread struggles, I feel like it's important to reflect on the impact of that era and the lasting legacy it left on our collective experiences. Did you know that approximately 9 million Americans have an eating disorder? And it breaks my heart to know that eating disorders are still on the rise, in large part due to social media basically becoming our new tabloids. But at least these days, we have so many like amazing body positivity movements too, and so much more representation out there for bodies of all shapes and sizes and colors. And we still have all kinds of work to do, but at least there's that. The 90s era of ultra skinny models and unattainable beauty standards left an enduring mark on my life and the lives of countless others, including almost every single female friend that I have to this day, and a few men. And I'm not exaggerating. More of my friends have suffered from disordered eating or body image issues at one point in their lives than not. Isn't that sad? I mean, that sucks. Do y'all remember when being heroin chic was like actually a cool thing at one point, like a full on accepted and celebrated trend from the 90s that had so many women aiming for that emaciated, drugged out, hollow look? Ugh. Why did we ever allow that to be a thing? It started with like high fashion supermodels and runway shows, but it like bled into the mainstream media and culture, infecting all the impressionable minds of the youth. Remember how everyone wanted to shop at Abercrombie & Fitch and Calvin Klein and Ralph Lauren, and all they did was embrace the super skinny model trend of featuring only young, attractive, emaciated models, super slim physiques, perpetuating an image of the ideal body type, which was small 12-year-old boy, apparently, basically. Like, no ass, no curves, no fat allowed, just flat, flat, flat. The skinnier and bonier you could get, the better. Bonus if you could also be white and blonde. These days, however, there has been a shift in expectations, pressuring women to strive for impossibly tiny waists with dramatically large boobs and booties rather than to be walking skeletons. So consequently, plastic surgery rates have been steadily climbing as more and more women feel compelled to modify their bodies to resemble a synthetic Kardashian-esque figure, which in itself is unrealistic and artificial. Now, I'm not at all trying to shame people who choose to undergo plastic surgery, though, at all. You do you, boo. If someone decides to have surgery to feel more confident and empowered in their own skin, like, I fully understand and I support their choice. There are totally things I would do if I had the extra pocket change. Trust me, mama would love to try out some Botox. If only she could justify the cost. Each person should have the freedom to make decisions about their own bodies without judgment from others. So no shame here. My issue, though, lies in the societal pressures and the unrealistic beauty standards that push women and men towards this narrow and unattainable ideal. Instead, I wish we could just celebrate and embrace body diversity better, and acknowledge that every body is unique and beautiful in its own way. We don't all need to look the same in a ridiculous fake same, you know? And we are, as a society, at least doing a better job of heading towards that direction than we were back in my day. Growing up in the 1900s, as my kids like to say, but growing up in the 1990s, it seems like everywhere we turned were ads for Slim Fast and the Atkins diet and, you know, or some new water pill or caffeine pill, anything to make us not eat, anything to make us lose weight. We saw all the skinny women in the shows like Friends and Beverly Hills 90210 going on crash diets and only eating steamed vegetables for days, talking about how fat they were and how they needed to change everything about everything, you know, they were. We already thought that these women were tiny and beautiful and perfect. So when they looked at themselves and hated what they saw and were like, we need to change everything, you know, then we looked at ourselves and we were like, oh, snap, we must need to change everything about ourselves too. Like, we need to change even more if these people aren't even perfect enough, you know? And we heard the line so often that nothing tastes as good as skinny feels. And now, these days, I'm like, beesh, please, all sorts of mess tastes better than it feels to be skin and bones. Dang. Growing up, most of us had a friend or a friend's mom or sister on the grapefruit diet or the cigarette diet. Heck, I myself was buying Slim Fast at the age of 12, eating nothing but carrots all day with those nasty, chalky shakes, like doing tons of crunches around the clock in order to try and burn more calories than I took in, like the media suggested I should. So in the 90s, a time when razor-thin models and celebrities seemed to rule the freaking planet, we were told over and over that we were less than if we didn't look like them. And most of us didn't look like them. We had the audacity to be out here looking like normal, regular human beings with curves and stretch marks and dimples and flaws. And we really thought that something was inherently wrong with us. Y'all, even commercials for razors showed completely hairless bodied women shaving their legs and armpits, like just shaving over a bald ass leg, you know? And like, it was like you couldn't even have body hair as a woman. Oh my gosh. For nearly my entire life, like that's how commercials were. I was in my late 20s before I actually saw a commercial for razors that had models with actual hair on their bodies that they shaved off. It actually stunned me. I remember so clearly being at a doctor's office and seeing this for the first time in the waiting room. And I actually stood up and walked over to the TV and I just stared in disbelief. Like, are all of you seeing this? I was so proud. It was such a weird moment. I was like, yes, hairy leg, armpit hair. Like, they were actually showing human women with actual body hair like we all actually have in real life. In the 90s, you didn't see that. Even the ladies shaving the body hair in the commercials in the 90s had no hair to shave. I don't know. It was just like such a refreshing moment to witness a commercial embracing real women with real body hair, like finally acknowledging that women have body hair and that it's okay. Like, and you know, different natural variations in our bodies. Like, it just felt like a small victory in the battle against unrealistic beauty standards that had haunted us for far too long. And it's wild to me how emotional a hairy armpit made me in that moment. Like, the era I grew up in did quite a number on me, if you can't tell. In the 90s, those Images of what society deemed as perfect bodies were everywhere, from magazines to TV to runway shows. And as a young millennial, there was almost no escaping it because it seeped into every nook and cranny of society. We were drowning in these messages, and they became a yardstick by which we measured our own worth. During my tween years was when I was barely in middle school. The relentless pressure to conform to society's idea of perfection began to weigh heavily on my young shoulders. And I already stood out in fifth grade as one of the tallest girls in our grade. And it didn't help that I wasn't rail thin. I was already getting boobs and like going through puberty very early, and not many girls around me were at that age. So I hated being the odd one out. And I remember duct taping my boobs down in fifth grade because I was somewhat of a tomboy and I didn't like the new changes happening in my body. By sixth, seventh grade though, I had the body of a woman and I looked years older than I really was. And I had hips and I enjoyed food, and those things are not allowed in the 90s, y'all. I vividly recall experimenting with Slim Fast shakes, naively believing it was a harmless shortcut to looking more beautiful, to becoming what the world kept telling me that I should be. Little did I know that this seemingly innocent attempt would lead me down a distressing path. Truthfully, the impact of those challenging times still lingers in my life. And while I do face occasional struggles, I'm in a much better place now. It's not an everyday battle like it used to be, because I have done so much inner work and healing over the years. And I now have a much firmer grip on my well-being and my relationships with food and with my body. Thank God. It's been years since I've deprived my body of food, and I will never go back to those harmful ways again. But my journey towards self-mastery continues and has a very far to go. I'll be on it for my whole life, but I'm determined to keep moving forward and to fully leave the dark days of disordered eating in my past. But that mess, I'm not going to lie, like it's pretty deeply ingrained in a lot of us. And it's hard as hell to unlearn the things that we learned in our formative years. But I believe in us. Like, we've got this, y'all, because we can do hard things. Over the years, I've had countless conversations, mostly with women who still fight demons from that era. And it's astonishing how many of us continue to wrestle with the impact of the diet culture and body shaming ways of our childhood. But again, just please remember that you're never alone, and it's okay to still be on your journey. Most of us are. And the fact that we're here acknowledging our struggles and working towards full healing is a testament to our strength and resilience. So thank you for being here. You're a badass, and the world is a better place with you in it. So keep taking the right steps, keep taking care of yourself, because you deserve all of the love, especially from yourself. If you or someone you know is struggling with eating disorders or body image issues, there is help available. Getting support from professionals like therapists and nutritionists or support groups can really, really change your life. But just remember that healing's a journey. It's okay and oftentimes necessary to take it one step at a time, one day at a time, one breath at a time. Sometimes just take all the time you need. Just keep breathing and moving forward. And I'm going to link y'all to some awesome resources in the description box below, and some books that I recommend as usual. I always love to leave y'all my favorite book recommendations with each episode. And I've thoroughly been enjoying so many of you sending me messages about how much you're loving the new books that you've been throwing yourselves into. And it just makes my heart so happy, because the majority of the books, almost all the books that I recommend, are ones that I have read myself that have truly touched my heart. And I love to hear that they're touching many of your hearts too. As children, many of us faced considerable struggles that left lasting impressions on our mental and emotional well-being. And unfortunately, a substantial portion of us did not have the opportunity to unlearn the detrimental thought patterns and beliefs that we inadvertently absorbed during our formative years. My acknowledging this reality is what inspired me to speak about this topic today, not only to shed some light on the pervasive nature of these challenges, but also to create a space for understanding, like a place of empathy. I feel that when we share our stories and we support each other, we can build an environment of growth and healing. And so I want to continue this dialogue and breaking down the barriers of shame and stigma and moving towards a future where self-love and acceptance prevail. And I'm really curious what age most of us were when these things really started to hit us hard and change us. Was it middle school for you? Nearly everyone I talk to says it's middle school. You know, my first memories of having body issues started when I was 11. I was trying out Slim Fast by the time I was 12. By ninth grade, though, I was full on starving myself, convinced that I needed to reach an impossibly low weight to be accepted or admired. And I didn't fit in as much as it was, thanks to my undiagnosed learning disabilities and my anxiety, just turning me into a full-blown weirdo in other people's eyes. And I couldn't seem to control those things, but I could control what I ate. I could control how many calories I took in. And that felt kind of powerful because I didn't see how unbelievably unhealthy it was, but I had control of something and I was losing weight. And that was what mattered to me at the time. It also didn't help that my mom was tiny and a naturally very petite woman with this beautiful blonde model. She was a Coca-Cola girl. She did ads for Arby's and jewelry and clothes. She was on billboards and in commercials before I was born. And although she left that part of her life behind by the time I was born, she still had the exact same beautiful face and tiny, skinny body and blonde hair and blue eyes and just looked like all the ads out there that I compared myself to as I started growing up. She was only 5'2", so I outgrew her by third grade in height and in shoe size. And I was like this awkward, dark-haired giant, and she was like this itty-bitty, fragile specimen of dainty beauty, like a little fairy, you know? Like, she was a sexy baby, and I was a monster on the hill. And I was like, what is wrong with me? Like, I don't look like my mom. I don't look like these perfect girls all over TV, all over everything I read, all over everything I see. I need to fix this. I need to quit eating. So she and my daddy always told me that I was wonderful and beautiful and perfect, and I didn't need to change anything about myself. But I was like, you have to say that because you're my parents and I don't believe you. And I didn't. I didn't actually believe them when they said these things. And they never knew about my disordered eating because I never told anyone. They knew that I suffered with body image issues and anxiety, but they didn't know that I was going days without food and attempt to shrink my body on the regular. Now, as if the pressures of the 90s diet culture weren't enough, my experience was further complicated by the presence of ADHD and anxiety. With ADHD, maintaining focus and self-control, especially concerning eating habits and body image emotions, became a constant struggle due to my difficulties regulating my emotions. And my anxiety only heightened those feelings of inadequacy and fear of judgment that I already carried with me. So I felt even more vulnerable to the toxic influences of the diet culture frenzy. And it really was like this perfect storm of insecurities and social pressures that freaking swallowed me whole. I would not eat for days and I would work out a ton and then I wouldn't be able to stand it anymore. And I would just binge eat all the sugar that I could find and just get all of that dopamine boost that my ADHD brain was lacking. And then I would feel guilty and then I would stop eating again for days and my weight would just, you know, yo-yo constantly. It was such an exhausting and unhealthy pattern. And it was doing horrible things like my organs and my mental health. And it was bad for my physical health, my mental health. And I would always restrict myself from food when I was extra emotional or anxious or sad too. Like even if I wasn't feeling particularly fat that day or whatever, if it was just becoming a habit of I'm feeling depressed, I'm going to make sure I'm not eating today. I don't know if I did it as a way to like punish myself or as a way to feel like more in control of something. But when life got harder, I got skinnier. The really sad part was that I would get so many compliments from people when I would start losing the weight. Like during the summer before my sophomore year, I came back from a trip with a friend and I had hardly been eating that whole week that we were gone. I was just laying out, trying to get tan, trying to lose my appetite and get skinny and trying to be what everyone was saying I should look like. And when I got home, it was nothing but, whoa, Laura, what's your secret? You look great. Keep it up. You know, I was a 16-year-old child. Why was anyone commenting on my weight at all? Adults I worked with at a restaurant commented on it. Adults at my church commented. Adults in my extended family commented. And nice comments are not like, why were all these grown-ass humans commenting on my body? And why did they all think that was okay? And those comments stuck with me. Back then, I saw it as, yay, I'm losing weight. I'm being accepted. I should definitely keep this up because people are noticing and telling me I should keep it up. So they're telling me my body is much better when I starve it. And now I am more accepted. It's just disgusting. You know, I thought, well, this is definitely a good thing. You know, they kept reinforcing the dangerous belief that thinness equals acceptance and worth. And that didn't change much as I got older either. After each pregnancy, when I'd finally start to lose the far too much baby weight that I had gained, there were immediate comments from people all over asking how much more weight did I need to lose before I was back into my pre-baby clothes, you know? And since I was doing YouTube vlogs at the time, I had to deal with everyone and their uncle's opinions of my body and if I was bouncing back quick enough to their liking or not. My whole life, everyone has felt entitled to comment on my body and shame me for my weight, no matter if I was a size 2 or a size 10. And it all started when I was just a child. And it's infuriating. And I will bust a cap if someone ever tries that mess with my daughter or my sons. But they're super skilled in jujitsu and know how to kick ass far better than I do. But I think about how lovely and healthy and happy my kids' childhoods have been. And it gives me such peace. Like, they do not know a single ounce of the self-loathing or insecurity or anxiety that I did as a child. And I can't ever tell you enough how grateful that makes me. Because as a kid, I couldn't wait to grow up because I thought it meant that I would just magically become a badass, secure woman who went after what she wanted, you know, with unshakable confidence, like in the movies. You know, I would just turn 30 or whatever and just be like, I'm amazing. But no, transitioning into adulthood didn't automatically heal my scars left by the 90s. Not by a long shot. My battle with disordered eating lingered on, creating a roller coaster ride of progress and setbacks over the years. As I kept trying to control my calorie intake, and then I'd lose control, and then I'd try to get it back with longer stretches of not eating and more hours of cardio till I dropped. And not to sound cliche, but my children saved me. With each beautiful baby that I birthed, a piece of me healed and my capacity for self-love grew. And it was this profound realization that struck me deep within. Like, how could I guide these precious souls to have, you know, to love and care for themselves when I struggled to fully love and care for my own self? Their presence ignited a new purpose, inspiring me to be a better example, to be kinder to myself and to nurture my own well-being so that I could guide them on a path of self-love and acceptance. Throughout my adventure of motherhood over the last 14 plus years, I have learned more about resilience, compassion, and unconditional love than I ever thought possible. Like, my kids became my greatest teachers, reminding me that my worth wasn't defined by my appearance or by external expectations. They showed me that self-love wasn't just an abstract concept, but a vital aspect of leading a fulfilling and authentic life. Because I'm not kidding you, I didn't believe in self-love until I became a mother. I thought that it was a lie. I thought people just faked it. And with each pregnancy, I appreciated more and more myself and my amazing body that grew, housed, birthed, and fed 4 entire human beings. Like, what a miracle it is to be a woman, to have this body, to be able to create life. I was all of a sudden just so grateful for my body and started learning to look at it in a new way and started to love it for what it provided me, my beautiful family, you know? I finally realized that recovery demanded more than just changing my diet or exercise routine. It meant rewiring my mindset and perception of myself. And this transformation would take years of dedicated learning and growth. And it's ongoing. It required addressing my core emotions of inadequacy and my relentless pursuit of an impossible ideal that had been ingrained into me during my formative years. And as I talked with my doctor, I learned new healthy habits and I started changing my mindset. And I knew I had to learn to love myself so that I could teach my kids to love themselves. And I can't ever thank them enough for being my incredible teachers who love me as unconditionally as I love them. In the past few decades, society has undergone a substantial transformation in the way that we perceive body image and beauty ideals. And while we still have so much damn work to do and so far to go, at least the toxic beauty standards that once dominated the 90s have given way to more of an inclusive, accepting environment. And we now witness a pretty remarkable shift in how we discuss fatness and diets and recognizing that fat jokes and skinny jokes are body shaming and are not okay. And we aren't just plastering the aisles with body shaming magazines anymore. And that is a huge step forward. Gone are the days when being fat was demonized and considered the ultimate flaw. Instead, we're finally learning to embrace diverse body types and celebrate the uniqueness of each individual. And I'm here for it. Instead of like emaciated, sick looking stick people with empty eyes on the cover of every single magazine, we now see all sorts of body types and colors and shapes and hair. And we now have campaigns like Dove's groundbreaking Real Beauty. It's been a trailblazer in the body positivity movement for over a decade now. And instead of conforming to our old society's narrow definition of beauty, Dove ads showcase a diverse group of women with varying body types and backgrounds and careers. And these inspiring women share their empowering stories and they redefine beauty on their own terms. And I love that. Like, what I would have given to see more of that around me during my formative years, to see real women with real bodies and real flaws who were happy in their skin and proud of who they were, while society allowed it instead of ripping it to shreds. That could have taken my life in a totally different direction. Today, we also have companies like Aerie, a brand at the forefront of body positivity since I think 2014. I mean, I think they were like the first one I can think of at least, but they did something wild, embracing unretouched photos in their campaigns and making super powerful statements against unrealistic beauty standards. They featured models of all types of body shapes and colors and variations, and they celebrate the beauty of uniqueness in all of us. And it's glorious. I mean, underwear ads of thick girls with stretch mark covered thighs. Yes, please. That is who I want to buy clothes from. That would have blown my mind to see as a child. You never saw anything like that when you were a kid in the 90s. No freaking way. You saw Victoria's Secret skeletons with big boobs up in the windows. You didn't see the cute curvy girls with the stretch marks and the dimples and stuff. You didn't see that like you do now. And I freaking love it. I love that now it's so much more normal to see other girls like us who also have cellulite, stretch marks, body hair, beauty marks in weird places. These campaigns and many others like it serve as a testament to the positive shift in promoting body positivity and embracing diversity. I love that we're trying to encourage people to love themselves more and to feel proud in their authentic beauty. As these positive changes continue to unfold, I'm hopeful that social media platforms will also follow suit in the future, but I do understand that that may take time for widespread transformation, but I have hope. You know, things have already improved in so many ways, and while societal changes are finally taking place, we do still have to nurture our internal landscapes. The voyage towards self-acceptance and healing is an ongoing process, but every single step we take is a victory in itself. So be gentle with yourself and remember that it's okay to have bad days. It's okay to not be okay. It's okay to struggle, but it's equally as important to reach out for help and support. Surround yourself with compassionate and understanding people who lift you up and remind you of your inherent worth. Seek professional guidance from therapists or counselors who specialize in body image issues and eating disorders if needed. And don't be afraid to share your story, because I believe that there's immense power in vulnerability and connection. That's kind of the whole point of my podcast. So the trek towards self-love might be incredibly challenging, but with each hurdle, you do grow stronger and wiser and you learn so much. So embrace your journey. It's unique to you and no one else can walk in your shoes. You know, remember, of course, that healing isn't linear. There may be setbacks, but they are opportunities for growth. Each day that you choose self-compassion and self-love, you are rewriting the narrative of your life. And you're helping to rewire your brain in the best possible way. And as you continue this path of self-discovery and healing, surround yourself with positive influences as much as you can. I can't stress that enough. Cut out the toxicity. Any toxicity you have control to cut out, cut it out. I mean it. And if you're going to be on social media a lot, make sure you're following the good stuff, man. Hide all the crap that makes you feel bad about yourself. Mute it, block it, make it go away, put it in a closet. Try to follow body positivity social media accounts. Read books and articles and listen to podcasts that promote self-acceptance. Engage in activities that nourish your soul. And don't let the poison out there suck you in. You have so much more power than you may realize. The beauty of self-love lies not in perfection, but in embracing your imperfections. Every scar, every stretch mark, every perceived flaw tells a story of resilience and growth. You are a masterpiece. You are an intricate canvas painted by life's experiences, and you deserve to cherish every single brushstroke. You're seen, you are valued, and you are worthy of love and acceptance just as you are. Your worth isn't contingent on your appearance or number on a scale. It comes from within. And as we choose self-compassion and self-love every day, we actively rewrite the narrative of our lives, creating a positive shift within our minds. I could go on and on, but I'm gonna wrap this up. So as I wrap up this episode, I just wanna remind you, the power to love yourself unconditionally lies within you. The key to unlocking a fulfilling life lies in the embrace of your authentic self. You've got this, and I'm right here cheering you on all the way. I love you all so much, and I can't thank you enough for lounging with me today, y'all. So until next time, loungers, let's make a great day and keep striving to be our best selves. Peace, y'all.